Let's do it.
Let's go.
Okay. Welcome to 3 out of 3 Falls, a wrestling podcast. You laughed again. You do it every time. A wrestling podcast where your two hosts discuss three matches, one chosen by each of your hosts and one chosen by the random match generator. My name is Joe.
Hey, my name's Jason.
And we have three interesting matches for you this week. Sorry.
It should be good shit.
Yeah, pretty excited to dive into these. But before we do,
before we get started, everyone should go to our Tumblr account, our blog, tootf.tumblr.com. You can see links to all three of the matches that we will be discussing on this episode so that you can be up to date and aware of everything that we're going to be talking about in these three exciting matches.
And some news for the podcast. Oh, man, we should have led with this, too. Our schedule's changing. We post about this on the blog. We're going to bi-weekly schedule. Every 2 weeks, we'll post a new episode. And we're going to be posting some stuff on the skip week every Monday that we don't post an episode. We'll post some sort of neat content. We posted last time. Jason had made a ska playlist, 60s and 70s ska, in response to my slagging on 90s ska.
Well, I just wanted everyone to be able to skank like Sammy.
Yeah. Ouch. I was going to listen to your playlist.
It's a really good playlist, though.
I wanted to listen to it, but I don't have a Spotify account, so I got out of
that one.
Dude,
you can still listen to it. Don't get out of it.
I can listen to 10 seconds of each song. I'm not going to skank, though, unless I'm making fun of someone skanking. You know what I thought would be great? I wish I might try to make this someday when I'm less lazy. A supercut video on YouTube where it plays Sami Zayn's entrance theme, but is just like a supercut of all of like Kevin Owens power bombing Sami Zayn. Pop up power bomb, apron power bomb. Just like to his, it shows him skank out, and then it's just power bomb. Do 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 do. Power bomb. Wouldn't that be great?
I'd fucking
call
watch it.
Kevin Owens, ska fan. boom. So maybe I'll make that someday. Maybe that'll be the content we post one Monday. Who knows? But yeah, we're gonna be posting some stuff on the blog, and go check it out. Like stuff, reblog, ask us questions, talk shit about us. That would
subscribe
be really fun,
us.
Actually.
Subscribe to
the podcast.
Yeah. But we have a question.
We have a fan question we want to answer this time. One of our listeners wrote to us and asked us, Jason, you
want
to?
Yeah. What is scientific/technical wrestling?
So episode we talked to, Jason, you had mentioned scientific wrestling. I believe similar, I'd never heard that, but I assumed you meant technical wrestling is the same thing, right?
Basically, yes. Yes. I mean, it's
that?
Interchangeable. It's what is that? So basically, I look at that as scientific/technical wrestling is non-brawling, more mat-based, more Greco-Roman style or inspired professional wrestling, where there's suplexes and arm drags and, you know, like slams or things that are taking advantage of someone's position in the ring. Rather than just hauling off and hitting someone in the face, you would maybe go for a drop toe hold to put them in a compromising position so that you can execute a further move. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yes. It's stuff that is like, not to simplify it too much, but it's like moves you would have to learn. Techniques, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Trying to come up with a similar, maybe like if you're playing Street Fighter and mashing the buttons, not too scientific. But if you're timing out, you know, your combos and you're doing, you know, special moves that you have to know the directional pad and what buttons to hit at the same time. You know, that's a silly analogy, but
hey,
and it's counters and moves where here's how you do the move. You pull the guy's arm back here, you grab him under a leg, and then you flip him this way. Like, not just punch the guy in the face, clothesline him down to the ground, you know?
Yes.
There's a technique to it. Technical.
Yes, there's technique. There's a technique. There's a science behind it.
Yeah.
Hence, scientific and or technical wrestling.
Cool.
I hope that answers the question from our loyal listener.
They can tell us. I bet that listener is a big dummy. Now that we've answered all our fan questions, do you want to dive into the matches?
Yeah, let's dive into match number one.
Match number one is Jason's pick.
Yes, this is my pick for this week. It is Sting and Lex Luger versus the Steiner Brothers for the WCW World Tag Team Championship from Super Brawl 1, May 19th, 1991. So this match, to me, is an example of what is classic early 90s WCW. To me, it is a match that is significant because if you look at the larger card that's associated with this pay-per-view, it's kind of like the last breaths of the old NWA, of the Crockett era NWA, leading into the youth and vitality and energy that the younger WCW stars are bringing to the table. So you have people who are both associated with all four people in this match, Sting, Lex Luger, and Rick and Scott Steiner, were technically a part of the NWA, but they were young enough where they could be some of the fresh young stars that are associated with the new era of WCW, where they're trying to rebrand themselves as a more youth oriented wrestling promotion. And this match is kind of an anomaly in WCW's history, where it's the first time that they've tried to do a face versus face match.
This match is all good guys.
It's all good guys.
There was a video package before the match.
Oh, man, the video package was so good, so dramatic.
Okay, so I missed maybe the beginning of it, but I watched what seemed like a good long amount of it. There's no narration.
Yeah. No narration. It's just
so it didn't tell me anything about the match.
I think that what it did was it was supposed to kind of explain the drama of like the kind of heightened anticipation behind the match. Basically, the video package was a lot of slow motion footage of each competitor in the match with lots of like dramatic wind chimes and like Friday the 13th kind of like vibes in there. But one good thing, or actually the best thing in this slow-mo video package is that there is a slow-motion Frankensteiner in it that Scott Steiner does, and it looks fucking awesome.
But
and it just made me go, oh, shit. I remember whenever Scott Steiner wasn't so jacked, and he could actually do that move.
First of all, Scott Steiner is under the radar jacked in this match.
Oh, yeah.
I thought for a moment more jacked than Luger for a little bit, but just not showing it off as much. He's showing something off. We'll talk about that later. I was confused by this match because the commentary puts over Sting and Rick Steiner used to be tag team partners. These guys are all pals. And the story starts to come out little by little during the match, which is early on. I forget if it's Dusty. Dusty Rhodes is on commentary with...
Oh, it's the dream team of Dusty JR. Rhodes and JR on commentary.
So one of them says that they're feeling something that they never felt before. And later on, there's like some communication.
Dusty says they're feeling something that they've never felt before. Yeah. The best friends. Best friends.
And then later on, there's like a... Sting, Luger tags Sting, but the Steiners don't see it, and they think Sting is being a jerk, and someone says like tempers are flaring, so there's all this stuff going on, like, oh, now the friends are going to get mad. I've got some issues with what that leads to, but in the beginning of the match, I was just like, the video package didn't tell me anything because there's no narration. It's just like, these guys wrestle. And then they come out and they're like, hey, they're all happy. You know, two guys wearing purple and pink, and then Sting and Lex Luger.
And
it's bizarre, too, because you have the two types of tag teams. You've got a tag team that is a legit tag team. They're the Steiner brothers. They're not Rick and Scott Steiner, you know?
Yeah.
They're a real unit, you know?
Well, and they're also they are the WCW World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah. And I really love that you have these two guys who, you know, they're in similar colors. They're both big. They're brothers, but their looks are different enough that there's clearly this one guy and this one guy, you know? But they're still a cohesive unit.
It's a similar dynamic to the Hart Foundation, where you have someone who is...
Or the British Bulldogs.
Or the British Bulldogs. You have someone who's the brute, who's more the muscular strength dude, and then you have the other guy who is more scientific.
Yeah.
Style wrestling.
And then you have, on the other side, you've got the classic take two huge stars and mash them up.
Yeah.
And have them fight for the tag team belts, which I usually hate.
Hey, man.
But,
Sting and Luger work well together in a tag team. Like, I was very surprised. Also, just to say right off the bat, I had never seen this match before. Again, I had only seen 2 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And it was a very short clip that was on, like, a Best of WCW tape that I used to have. And it was kind of like a chopped up version of it. And I always wanted to see this match. And because I enjoyed those 2 minutes. So I was excited to see the remainder match. What were you going to say, Joe? I cut you off.
Luger is a surprise in this match. Because the Luger that I remember, whether it's a real Lex Luger that ever existed or not, was like... slow, low intensity. And Luger in this match is, from the very beginning, running around, power moves, smashing Rick. Rick bounces off him when he tries to shoulder tackle him.
As and Dusty said, like a ball off a wall.
Like a ball off a wall. And Luger was really cool in this match. I think they're all really cool. They all do. I liked a lot of the moves in this match. I feel like we see a good baker's dozen different suplexes.
You do. You see some good stuff from like each team. I think that you see some good tombstones. You see some good Steiner line, an amazing like T-bone suplex. Just to go back to Luger real quick, how this was kind of like the different kind of Luger than what you were used to seeing, is that this was Luger before he got too jacked.
Yeah. He's fucking jacked, but
he's still jacked.
He can move.
But his cardio's still good. Like, he's still, like, he can do those, like, power slams, and, you know, he's still young. Like, he's still young, and he's still actually trying to, like, prove himself, because I think the main thing that Lex Luger always wanted was that he wanted to be a world champion. Like, he had been U.S. champion, like...
He is in this match currently.
And he is currently in that match. He was about to start a long program where he was finally going to take the world championship from Ric Flair at the Great American Bash. He was finally going to take it from him, because he had missed out multiple opportunities to win the title ever since he left the Four Horsemen in 1987. So it had just been slowly just building and building and building, and it was finally going to pay off. So I think that Luger was actually still excited to actually be a wrestler.
Okay.
And it was about to be the culmination of everything that he had worked really, really hard for. And also, he's having a pretty stellar match with three of his friends, like actual friends. So this was an opportunity for them to showcase their ring prowess and their
Yes.
ability.
Yeah. I mean, Luger's a. You just said he was young. We're only 6 years out or 7 years out from him being old and boring.
Dude, but that, like, those 7 years, that's a lot of shit. I mean, he had
Yeah.
to go through the whole, like, debacle of the Lex Express in WWF,
WWF, yeah. Yep.
where he was like the
A lot of
All-American hero.
stuff.
It wasn't fucking working, and he wasn't over. And also, he had a really bad motorcycle injury
Oh, wow.
in 1992. See, originally
Is that
left
where he got his
WC.
steel plate in his arm?
Yes.
Best gimmick ever.
Exactly. It is a fucking good gimmick,
'Cause you don't
but
need to actually have a plate in your arm.
no, you
You
don't need
just
to have a plate in
pretend.
your arm. Yeah.
And then your forearm, an easy move, looks brutal. It's
Dude, totally.
brilliant. Brilliant.
But that's the reason why I think he lost it. He lost a step was because that injury actually took more away from him than we were allowed to know. And it took years for him to get back into kind of like a fighting shape. Like whenever he was taking on the NWO in the late 90s, before he went into the Wolfpack. That I felt like was a similar Luger to the Luger that you may have seen in
Okay.
this match.
Cool. To quickly touch on Rick Steiner,
Yes.
who I think is an underrated wrestler, even though, I mean, it's not like people don't like Rick Steiner. He has a unique look and a unique, I mean, I was never a huge Rick Steiner fan, but like him doing a bulldog, he looks so bulldoggy that it's
Oh
my favorite
yeah.
bulldog I've ever seen, you know?
His nickname at that time was technically the Dog Face Gremlin.
Yeah, Dogface Gromlin was a great nickname.
Yeah. I mean
Yeah.
they look like he just looks like a dude from Michigan who will beat you
Will beat
up.
the shit out of you. Hey, what the
Yeah.
fuck is up with the announcer's booth touching the ring?
Dude, I don't know about that. That was really weird.
That's super weird.
Scott Steiner goes for a clothesline to Sting, and he accidentally flips over the top rope and lands on Jim Ross and Dusty Rhodes's like announcing position table. And it looks really awkward, and you can tell they're not prepared for it. Maybe it's just to make it seem more like legit sport. I know that most boxing announcing took place like right
Oh,
at
okay.
the ringside. So it may be referencing that.
Can I ask you a few more questions?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Did you like, well, first of all, did you like the match?
Yeah, well, mostly I like the match. I have a
Yeah.
couple. Okay. Is this the greatest tag team match I've ever witnessed? No. It is the
No.
American Dream's great. He says after this match, it is the greatest tag team match he's ever witnessed.
Well,
As of
this
1991, so who
yeah,
knows?
well, this match is kind of fucked up because
Well,
I think that like Dusty's involvement, because he was Booker at the time, it was basically shared booking between him and Ric Flair. This reads like a Dusty Rhodes match all over.
just do a
All
bunch
over.
of cool shit and then have a
Do a bunch of cool
bizarre
shit,
ending.
have a fucking schmoz finish
So the
where
finish.
right, yeah.
A Russian man I've never seen before, who may or may
Oh
not be
shit.
actually Russian.
That's Nikita
Nikita
Koloff.
Koloff. He runs out.
You've never seen Nikita Koloff
No.
before? Oh man.
He
Continue.
runs out ostensibly to hit Lex
Luger.
Luger in the face with a chain that might have a blade on it.
It's a Russian chain.
A Russian chain, right? He comes up to hit Luger. He accidentally hits Sting.
Yeah.
Nobody sees this. Because Sting pushes Luger out of the way, and the Steiners are like trying to wake the ref up or something because the ref got knocked over. I forget. Maybe they're just out of the ring, right?
They were
So
out of the ring.
I think Scott comes in, maybe pins Sting.
Yeah.
Sting's busted open. The match ends with the Steiners winning, retaining their belts, and then all the four friends standing around confused. What happened? We don't know. Why are you bleeding, Sting? And instead of telling them what happens, Sting runs off after Koloff. Now,
And fights him.
Yes, and fights him in the parking lot and stuff. Now, my confusion is, why wouldn't Sting take the other three guys with him? Why isn't, if Koloff is feuding with Luger, why didn't Luger run off after him? Why is this like Koloff feud, like a like? Are they transferring the feud from Luger to Sting? It
So,
was just so like weird that you had this really cool match with all these guys who are friends, and then it just ends with people in the ring, in the middle of the ring, like shrugging, going, "I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. One of the fuckers knows
so
what's happened." And then he runs away, and they go, "Why'd he run?" They don't chase him. It's totally weird.
So this is again like this is just messy, dusty booking
Okay.
because what this is referencing is that Nikita Koloff and Lex Luger had a very long feud over the US title in 1987. Nikita
Four
Koloff,
years before this match.
4 years ago, which that is like, it's kind of like, you know.
In 1991, that was half of my life.
Yeah, dude, same here. That was the way that that the NWA and WCW would go though with their storylines. They would reference shit that happened like 10 years ago because they are assuming that you always watched WCW Saturday Night at 6:05
That's
every
pretty
night.
cool.
And Nikita Koloff had come back. He was a very strong. He was a really powerhouse heel in the mid-80s. He was originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He was part of the crew that was the Road Warriors, Rick Rude, Barry Darso, who was Smash
Yeah.
of Demolition, Curt Hennig, like this whole Minneapolis like crew that all kind of got into the business together. Nikita was legit jacked. He believed in his gimmick so much that he spoke Russian exclusively for 2 years to keep kayfabe
Was he
alive.
really Russian?
No, he learned it.
That's awesome. Sorry if I missed
He was,
something you said.
no, he
He
was,
is from Minneapolis.
yeah, he's,
He's not just based out of there. He legitimately was born there.
yeah, no, he was born from in fucking Minneapolis. He was managed by Ivan Koloff, who is a classic like 70s wrestler.
Yeah.
He was the wrestler who beat Bruno Sammartino for the WWWF Championship in 1971.
Just
Like
passed,
he's a,
right?
yeah, he just passed away a couple like month or
Months.
so
Yep.
ago, a couple of months ago or something. I got his autograph at a wrestling convention I went to in Nashville in 1992. I was so excited to meet Ivan Koloff because I thought he was just such a, like, he was a classic. He was a classic wrestler. In every sense of the word. But anyway, so Nikita,
Can I step in real
they,
quick? And
yes.
I just Googled Nikita Koloff because you said he was jacked, and you don't see him that much in the in this run-in, right?
Yeah.
When he ran out, and then when he ran away, I was like, that guy's not Russian. He did not look very Russian to me. He looks like Mojo Rawley.
Well, but at that time, like
And what
they
did
shaved his
Americans do?
head,
Yeah.
he looked more like a jacked version of Ivan Koloff.
Okay.
Like it's just, you know, that's just the
Yeah.
way this character was built. So he and Luger had an extended program in the 80s. He comes back in 1991 to WCW full time as an like a hardcore like I'm gunning for you, Luger. Character, I want my US title back. What I think that what was going on here with the weird transfer of feuds was that Luger and Koloff had had a few, they had had a small program. They're still involved with each other. They had fought, I think, on like a Clash of the Champions. But since Luger was leading into a program with Flair over the World Championship, Sting was the fan favorite who could take on this new ruthless heel who's returned, Nikita Koloff,
Okay.
who's still an upper middle card
Yeah.
heel.
You gotta, he needs something to do, and
He needs
Sting needs
something
something
to
to
do.
do, because, I mean, right now Sting is palling around with guys he's fighting.
Yeah, and eventually this would have eventually in the scheme of things, Luger would have won the championship, but then turned heel, and then you would have had the Sting versus Luger for the world championship
Cool.
program.
There's one more thing I want to say about this match before
Yeah.
we get into, well, I'll just say right now, I did like this match. It's really fun to watch. There's a couple things that are hard to parse, but and the story isn't super, but they do tons of cool moves. They're all really good, and it's fast. It's like surprisingly fast.
It's a really fast match. Like, I think that
It
the
felt
actual
short.
match, it's the match itself is only like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of shit. Like, each participant gets to kind of do their move range. You
Yeah.
know, like Luger gets to get in his sick clothesline on Rick Steiner, get in his power slam. He gets to technically, I think he gets to do the torture rack at some point.
They talk about it a lot. He
I think
misses it
that,
gets
like,
can it gets countered at one point. It was
yes,
one of the
yes. It
weird
get
parts of
it.
the match.
It got countered by Scott
By a
Steiner.
drop
That's
toe
right.
hold.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
No, side
But
Russian
like,
rakes, side Russian leg sweep,
yes.
sorry.
Yes, leg sweep. That's right. But then, you know, Sting comes in, does his like a crazy like over the top rope plancha to
Yeah, you know,
Steiner to
there's a
Rick on the
thing.
outside.
I'm gonna say
All kind
something about that later in the next match.
of... The plancha? Oh shit! Yes, you will. All
It's
right.
not a bad. Anyway, the so I like this match. I don't know if you want to say if you liked it or not before my last point.
I think that the thing that, well, I did like this match, and I think that even though it was a short match, they achieved their goal,
Was it everything you
which was,
expected from those 2 minutes?
I think I saw the best 2 minutes in this
Okay.
version. But the thing that I didn't see in the highlight version is whenever Scott Steiner came into the ring and did a bunch of like crazy shit,
Yes.
like amazing, like tilt-a-whirl suplex. There's like a belly to belly off the second rope by Scott to Sting. Just Scott is jacked, secret jacked,
Flipping these guys around like a maniac.
and ready to go. Like he's ready to fucking rumble.
I actually have
He's
two things.
been dying for this. Go ahead.
So, this is years before Scott would become a villain.
Years before Big Papa Pump.
Which, I like this Scott. Big Papa Pump disgusted me. But it looked like he was going to shoot like monsters out of his biceps. Like he had alien eggs in his biceps. It was disgusting. He
Who,
was,
Big Papa Pump?
yeah, whenever he flexed, it was like a mountain with another mountain on it.
Oh yeah,
And it
no,
looked like a gremlin was going to pop out. It was, ugh.
he's pretty disgusting.
But here he's great. And but can you just see the bad guy coming out in his moves, in his facial expressions? He
Oh
seems
yeah.
like he is born to be a villain.
Yeah.
You know, if they could just let him not have to pretend to be a good guy and run around, if they just let him let loose, he just seems vicious. And if he were cocky and arrogant, anyway, they do that with Big Papa Pump, and it is
Well,
everything I did not want
and
from.
actually they tried to break Rick and Scott up and turn Scott heel in 1992 in
Oh, wow.
WCW because he was because they had like a again it's me and the television title. They had a tournament for the television title and Scott Steiner actually won the tournament in the finals match against Ricky Steamboat,
Cool.
and Steiner like turned heel technically, but the following like 2 or 3 weeks later, the Steiners totally left WCW and went to WWF,
Oh, okay.
where they had to be a good guy face tag team.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the last thing I wanted to say, Rick and Scott Steiner are great. They have enough different, their characters, their body types, their looks, they're pretty neat. But I
Yeah.
gotta say, Scott Steiner's buns just steal the show here, right? The real star of this match, because he's standing facing away from camera, the corner they're in. So they get up on that ring, and he's got this pink, like, pleather singlet or something. And it's like, or vinyl, I don't know, whatever, you know. And holy smokes. It's just a total wedge immediately. And every time he's flying around the ring trying to do this stuff, can't get my eyes off those pink buns.
I think that what you've tapped into is what eventually came out in his later gimmick, where he's the big bad booty daddy.
Yeah, but I don't remember. I was so disgusted by the rest of his body that I don't remember his ass. But here he gets up there. I was like, what? I've never seen a butt like that. That's why you can't turn him heel. You can't make him a bad guy in the South. A bunch of crazy drunk women in the crowd looking at his pink buns. It's crazy. Those are the tag team champions right there. Left butt cheek and right butt cheek. Scott Steiner. Give him a little belt. I don't know. I'm just saying that. We can move on to the next match.
Match two.
Okay, moving on to match two. It's my pick this week. Scotty Riggs versus Raven. Sorry, I'm going to laugh. Let me do this over. just reading this match title. And I picked this match, and spoiler alert, I like this match. Okay, let me try to read it with a straight face.
Try it again.
I'm 33 years old, and I'm making a podcast where I'm talking about Scotty Riggs versus Raven. The fuck? What happened to us? Okay, Scotty Riggs versus Raven from World War III, 1997. November 22, 1997, Palace of Auburn Hills, outside of Detroit. I was not there, I'm pretty sure, but I definitely watched this live on pay-per-view and was like, damn, I wish we could be there to see those three rings. Anyway.
I have two words before we start.
Yes.
Which is American males. American okay. males.
I
American males.
Forgot about American the American males. But I like that in the middle of this match, there's a lot of things I like from the middle of this match. They explain the announcers. The announcers are up and down in this match. Mostly what I want to talk about is the announcers. But they explain that Scotty Riggs was in the American males. Buff Bagwell, his tag team partner, leaves, joins the NWO, starts having a good tag career there with Norton. And singles, he's on TV all the time as part of the NWO. Scotty Riggs is just a generic dude kind of wandering around, right?
Yeah.
Floundering in his singles career. I like that they explained that, because I had forgotten that Riggs was part of the American males.
Yeah. No, I definitely remember the American males. They were terrible.
Yeah. So this match, the background of this match is, it starts with J.J. Dillon being interviewed on the stage by Mean Gene.
About how Raven hasn't signed a contract and this may be his last match. How? It's like a smart baiting promo.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he comes in from the crowd, he wrestles when he wants under his rules, which is hilarious. Somehow he's getting paid even though he doesn't have a contract.
Yeah, he's a
Or maybe he just doesn't get paid. He just wanders around. He's from the Bowery. Raven is hilarious. I can talk forever about Raven. But Scotty Riggs is fighting him because Raven has been picking on him. Raven has this group of miscreants called his flock that he is assembling. And he tried to get Riggs to join, and Riggs said no. And Raven, like, is this the drop toe hold onto the...
This
onto
is
the chair,
drop hold
and
onto
Riggs
the chair.
Has to wear an eye patch because his eye was injured. And is Riggs going out for revenge from Raven.
Can you name all members of the flock?
Hell no. Joe. I can name Saturn, Billy Kidman, Van Hammer. who I have an autographed 8x12 of. It says to Joe from Van Hammer. My friend Dave got it for me as a joke. And like at the state fair. I wasn't even there. He's just like, here, Joe, thought you'd like this. Your favorite wrestler, just fucking with me.
Okay.
Sick Boy.
Ah, yes, yeah, Sick Boy.
And a guy they couldn't name. They didn't know. I think that's all. There's only five of them with him right at this point, right?
There's five total. Sick Boy hasn't joined yet.
No, he was there after was the match. He? Oh, yeah. Because Tony Schiavone said Sick Boy. That's how I remembered Sick Boy exists.
Oh, God.
I went, oh, I forgot Sick Boy.
Oh, man.
Then there was some guy who, like, debuted in a slightly earlier match who they didn't know. And it's before that giant tall guy debuted with them.
Before Reese.
Reese, yeah.
I think Lodi.
Lodi was not. Was he there?
Lodi was there.
Lodi was there? I thought he was, that looked like Lodi.
Because he was the sign guy.
Oh, yeah. Lodi was there. Raven's Flock. Weird. What is your.
Such a weird collective of. You know, misfit wrestlers.
Here's the thing I liked about Raven and Raven's Flock in this match, one of many, and Riggs. I like that, especially I remember WCW TV and pay-per-views from this era as being primarily NWO of Sting, Roddy Piper, blah, 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 you know, like, and
sure.
Just all this top, super top heavy. And then the undercard, especially on a Nitro, the undercard's just like, could you believe it? Marty Jannetty versus Kaz Hayashi. And you're like, why is this on TV? And their announcers are just talking about the NWO throughout. They're not even paying attention to the match, right? Even on pay-per-views, yeah. This pay-per-view starts off with, like, the Barbarian and Mang versus Glacier and Ernest Miller or something. Which, holy if there's
shit.
A story behind that match, I'll give you $5 because, you know, like, but what I forget. So in my mind, it's just WCW is a bunch of no one's paying any attention. And then yep. Chris Jericho is doing fun things. And then there's a bunch of top heavy shit. Right. So
it's not just Jericho doing shit. It's like, there's other bubbling shit. It's like Guerrero's doing shit. Malenko's doing shit. Benoit's doing shit. And then you have
those
this
guys
whole
were doing fun wrestling shit, but I don't remember their stories at all. I remember Jericho's stories. But what I like about this match is, and about Raven and the Flock and stuff like this, and especially Riggs, is that, like, there's a story behind this. Raven's been doing shit for 7 months, building the Flock, not signing a contract, having storylines with these guys in the Flock or the people he's fighting. I like that with a billion hours of TV and a humongous roster, they're still like, let's do something with Scotty Riggs. He gets a story. He gets a pay-per-view singles match in the middle or second half of the show, practically. And he looks pretty good in it. He does a lot of stuff. There's spots where he's the good guy who might win, and the crowd cheers. You know,
including a plancha.
Okay, hold on. I'll do my plancha bit in 1 second. But it's not just a rando match. There's an attention to detail here that I forget about in WCW, but it existed and it makes me happy. The plancha bit is, we watched a match from 1991 and Sting does a massive plancha to the outside. This match begins with Scotty Riggs doing
a fucking plancha.
A giant plancha, right?
They ask Riggs if he wants to. What does he say? He asks him if he
Kidman
wants.
It was Kidman talking, so when in one ear and out the other. Why is Kidman doing the talking for the Flock?
I don't know. So Kidman basically asks Riggs, it's like, you know, it's either under Raven's rules or, like, we're out of here. And Riggs answers with a plancha.
Yeah. So here's the thing. In 2017 now, for the past 4 years, any motherfucker jumps out of a ring and everyone chants NXT. You're on a random episode of NXT and someone just does a dive through the middle rope, even let alone over the top, and everyone's like NXT, oh my god, so unique. Fucking Scotty Riggs is doing that in the middle of World War III, 1997, you know,
which
people will flip their shit for someone who jumps out of the ring in every match, jumping out of the ring onto one guy. Here is the middle, you know, like So what I'm trying to say is, if you think you're, Sami Zayn's are that fucking awesome, skanking to the ring and jumping out, Scotty Riggs, underrated. Love to see Riggs in
So,
NXT. Not
oh
really,
man,
not really.
have you seen what Scotty Riggs looks like
I don't want to
nowadays?
know. I think I did. I've struck it from my memory. Anyway, I just think it's weird that like jumping out of the ring is now like a mark of like indie greatness when, you've got Sting doing it.
It was just an
And
aerial
then you've
maneuver.
got,
It was a high risk maneuver. That's all it was.
yeah, you've got a jabron like
It
Riggs. I
still
mean, I hate
is.
to say it, but
He is a jabron. But
Riggs does have
I
kind of a cool look, even with the eye patch. I didn't hate
Well, the
Riggs.
thing, Riggs was not that bad. I think that there were a couple things that
He sucks at in this
I
match.
like. No, that I liked about this match. I like that he technically got revenge on Raven with the drop, with his own drop to
Yeah.
hold onto the chair,
And
and
then a
Raven.
brutal bulldog under the chair, too.
Brutal Bulldog. Also, he does a weird like drop kick version variation on a Van Terminator,
That was
which
too
is
slow.
throws a chair at
Yeah.
Raven, and Raven catches the chair, and then Riggs drop kicks the chair into Raven's
You didn't
face.
think that was too slow? Raven had to like hold the
It
chair
was
up.
super, it was extremely slow.
But give him credit for
That's why it
trying.
was, yeah, give him a credit for trying. I think that the thing that I forgot about was Raven's Even Flow DDT,
Which is awesome.
which looks great and everyone popped huge
And
for.
he does three?
He does three of them.
Raven wins this match by doing by ranting at Riggs. He gets him, does the even flow, turns the whole match around, gets a mic, yells at him that
Which
he feels his pain.
before this match, before the Even Flows, Raven basically got his ass kicked.
He gets his
Essentially.
ass kicked a bunch, yeah. He does another even flow, keeps yelling at him, does another. They all look brutal. And then he wins by knockout, right?
Yeah,
A
technically.
count of 10, Riggs is unconscious. He doesn't pin him. He wins without having a pin. The ref is so unhappy with this. It takes him like 3 minutes to raise Raven's arm in victory. Tony keeps going, a hand has not been raised. The ref is not even raising his arm. Let me go on a little bit about commentary.
Go
The
for it.
commentary in this match is hilarious. There's great moments and there's not good moments. The
Yeah.
not good moments.
Now, first of all, before we get started on what the moments are, who
Oh yeah.
is on commentary
So
in this? It's
commentary in this is Tony Schiavone,
yeah.
Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Mike Tenay.
Okay.
So Mike Tenay is the guy who's going to give you the history, the sober take, right?
Sure.
Tony Schiavone is the good guy, play by play, and Bobby the Brain Heenan is the greatest entertainer in sports entertainment history.
Dude, I fucking love Bobby the Brain Heenan.
So
Fucking love him.
the bad commentary in this match, and I feel like this happens in WCW undercard matches all the time, is just Tony Schiavone trying to sell boring narration. So here's what it sounds like when Riggs bulldogs Raven on the chair. Riggs is gonna maybe try to bulldog him on the chair here, guys. And he did it! He bulldogged him on a chair! Incredibly! He just says he's gonna try to do it. Oh, he did it. He did the thing. It's like in a comic book where Spider-Man swings through the sky and the caption bubble says, Spider-Man swing through the sky, swing through the sky. Like don't write the same thing that just that the image is showing. But
I think that what it is with that kind of commentary style, which is something that I noticed in WCW at this time and in TNA, was that, rather than giving commentators bullet points, and they can kind of expand and actually try to like call the action in the ring as they are seeing it, they would give someone like Tony, like a line by line kind of like breakdown of what the fuck's going to happen in
yeah.
this match. You need to cover everything that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That really hinders a commentator's ability to be able to expand upon the match in a natural way, rather than it doesn't just seem rote and just stagnant, you know,
But
and like and just boring.
here, but then you've got Bobby the Brain Heenan. So Bobby Heenan, here's a Bobby Heenan Tony Schiavone back and forth that I loved so much I transcribed it, and it ends with a little Mike Tenay thing. The
Go for
Brain says, "I'd move the patch over to the good eye," and Tony says, "If you were Raven." Brain says, "Yeah, just slide it over." Tony says, "I'm sure Scotty Riggs would realize that and move it back." Brain says, "Not if you kick him in the head and knock him cold, then move the patch. Then he wakes up and can't see nothing and don't know where he is. Boom, you got him." And Tony Schiavone just sighs. And then somber Mike Tenay says, "The gospel according to the Brain." It was brilliant. It just made my whole night. The boom, you got him. Like, Brain, you're a genius.
Brain is a fucking genius. He really is. He's
Tony
amazing.
says, "Raven got the foot on the rope, I believe, in the nick of time." And Brain goes, "He could have kicked out, I believe, but he did that to conserve energy. Good move." Like, little stupid shit like that. What does Brain care about Raven versus Scotty Riggs? But he's still doing the job, you know? It's beautiful.
He just wants the heels to win.
It's
He's
so
just
beautiful.
explaining why the heels are doing whatever the fuck it is that they're doing, and it's fucking genius. He is the brain.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
But back, so this match, I was just thinking, I was totally shocked when Tony explains that Raven injured Riggs's eye with the drop toe hold in the chair. And he's about to do the same thing, and then Riggs reverses it. I flip my lid. I totally bought in there. And then there's a nine count on both of them. And then Riggs gets on to Raven, and there's a close two. Similar to how later in the match, Raven wins with a 10 count. I don't know. So that's sort of like synergy, the callbacks. This match was all right. I was really pleased with this match. I didn't even talk about why I picked this match, but before I do that, what'd you think?
Why did you pick this match?
Okay, I picked this match because we mentioned Raven before. And growing up, I really liked Raven. There's something about. So I was also a huge. My favorite music was all the grunge rock stuff. I don't even think Raven looks or acts very grunge rock or whatever. So it wasn't because of that. I think his look was pretty ridiculous. It's kind of cool, but also very silly. That weird, like, hemp and wooden bead necklace thing or whatever. The crazy hair, the flannel and the jacket, and he just has a crazy look. Raven's rules is funny and sounds funny. Quote the Raven, nevermore. What about me? What about Raven? Was hilarious. Slumping in that corner, whining, cutting promos there. I hated most of the flock, but I just like it's. Just, I hated most of the nation. Loved Farouk.
So, did you like Saturn, Joe?
I didn't. I do in hindsight a little, and I did sometimes back then because he was a cool wrestler, right? But the crazy look, and when he started feuding with Raven, I just wanted Ra he was like the Rock of the flock, right? I
Yeah, he
don't
was
want
actually.
the cool leader guy that I like in the group to take it over, but that's what happens in almost every stable. And it bummed me out. And then when he was like wearing dresses fighting Jericho, maybe, or DDP, I don't know. I just didn't like. He was like. He did something similar to the artist formerly known as Gold Dust, I think, right? Just going all out.
Yeah, he
And
did.
many would dis. I feel like the vast majority of people would disagree with me when I say that the artist formerly known as Gold Dust, I'm okay with doing that, but Saturn, for some reason, wasn't as interesting or successful to me.
It didn't seem as believable.
Okay. Yes. There we go. I like how you have like a real reason, and I was just going, "Eh." I don't know, but yeah, I was always, Raven was like a Farouk. He was mean to his turds and they did his bidding and he whined and he did cool power moves. Is there any, what's the difference between even flow DDT and regular DDT?
It's the kick to the gut and the way that Raven actually falls, and the way that the person that the move is being done to, the way that they fall. It's not like, it's more like a regular DDT. You kind of like, technically, like you kind of like flip through it, like you like you roll through it essentially to take the bump. This is just kind of like a pancake flat face kind of DDT
It's really
variation.
cool. I
Yeah,
forgot
no,
how
it's
cool it
good.
is. What
No,
did you think
it
about?
looks like it's a really sick looking DDT. And it's one of the few DDTs that could be looked at as being a believable finisher.
Hey, do you want to give a final opinion on this? Or I think that was a good segue into the next match because I want to disagree with you.
Let's segue.
But did you like that match?
I did. I liked it more than I thought that I would.
Yeah. The next match is the random match generator's pick. Match number three. Maria versus Maryse from SmackDown 487, December 19th, 2008. How did I get through that without laughing? But I couldn't get through Scotty Riggs. There's just something about funny about Scotty Riggs. I hate to jump straight to the end. This is a random SmackDown match. It's not that random. I mean, it's random because it was randomly chosen, but
I think that this match puts the random in the random match
yes.
generator.
Here's why I said it's not that random. There's some sort of storyline element to it, which is that apparently Michelle McCool, who is the first ever Divas champion, which I was perplexed. I didn't know. Did they just start the Divas championship? Is that SmackDown only? Whatever. The winner of this contest is like number one contender. They get a championship match, right? So Michelle McCool, who I've never seen wrestle, is out sitting in a chair watching the match with one facial expression.
Yeah, looking fucking stoned face as
Just,
fuck.
yeah. And then we have Maria and Maryse. I've never seen a Maria match or a Maryse match. I've seen Maryse now that she's back with her husband, The Miz. At this time, don't believe that they were married. I've heard of Maria as, Maria and Mike Bennett, Maria Kanellis, right? Something like that.
Maria Kanellis.
This point in her career, I believe, lacking a last name, which drives me nuts about WWE and women when they get rid of all their last names. They're gotten tons better in the last like 2 years, but when I started watching again with you in like 2011, 2012, besides Beth Phoenix, everyone just had a Caitlyn. I'm like, you know where I can see Caitlyn? Down the street at Meijer. You know what I mean? Like the movie, I think she sold me my movie ticket the other time I went to the theater. Like Caitlyn, like what's, give her a fucking last name at least. Anyway, no offense to Caitlyn.
So I think that this match was, well, first of all, this is a part of your dark years, Joe.
Yeah, I did not know about this. Oh, sorry. The segue from the last match is that Maryse wins this with a fucking cool looking DDT.
Oh, yeah. No, she does. She does.
That DDT was neat, and she does a hair flip when she does it and like swings her leg too in a way that like echoes the hair flip, and it
Yeah.
looks, I don't know if it always looked this cool, but man, it looked like a kind of like a Street Fighter move, like Guile doing the kick in there,
It did. It did.
like
It
it
did.
was neat. That was a cool move.
It was. To answer that question about the DDT, yes, it always did look like this.
Cool.
It was like a hair whip DDT. I think that the two people that I like the most in this match,
Don't,
actually.
oh God. Sorry. Say who you're gonna say.
I think the two people that I
Can
like
I
the most in
guess?
this match, yes, you can.
If you say JR and Taz, I'd be furious. They are
Correctamundo, my man.
terrible.
Oh man,
JR has
dude.
like re like
Oh,
become
they're so good. They're so good.
Here's the
They
thing.
debate getting slapped in on their prom nights and wedding nights,
Yeah.
as well as discuss the merits of who should win. Jim Ross says the redhead, which
Here's
is Maria.
terrible.
Like, it's fucking
Here's
hilarious.
what you
They
do.
do not give a shit about this match.
You take a guy who once was such a fierce competitor that he created his own fuck the world belt. And you sit him next to perhaps the greatest play-by-play commentator in wrestling history.
Yeah.
And then they both act like subpar Jerry Lawlers the whole match.
Yeah,
It was
because
gross.
this.
Some of JR's remarks about the women, I was just like, I thought you were better than this.
Now this
It
is the
is
this
na it
is.
is ugh. It is almost as bad as all of the entry music in 2008. Both of these women have terrible entry music.
So basically, this is kind of towards the end of Jim Ross's run in the WWF as a commentator. And this was, I think, him moving to SmackDown was a big part of their Jim Ross and WWE's breakup. It's because this was at this time,
A demotion.
SmackDown is a fucking demotion. And you are basically getting the lines dictated to you. Like
Yeah.
you are, it is the epitome of the Tony Schiavone style of commentary, where everything
Yikes.
is
Yikes.
line by line, note by note. You have to cover this, get the storyline over, fuck the ring action. That's why they're talking about getting slapped on prom night,
Yeah.
and they don't even know who
The people are.
the people are. Like, they don't
They
even
do
know.
talk about these wrestlers as if they have no idea who they are.
Yes.
And then, like, they have a note card that they're looking at. They're like, so I guess this one's name is Maurice.
Yeah. So
She,
it's.
ooh, she has an attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's.
It's very, like, you
And I
mentioned
like
earlier.
Taz. I like JR and I like Taz.
Yes. Individually, apart from each other.
Maybe even together. I just didn't like how. Listen, the random match generator made me watch this match. I would have appreciated it if the fucking commentators took it seriously, because I
Yeah.
spent 8 minutes of my life on it, you
Yes,
know?
exactly. You mentioned earlier that you were confused about the Divas Championship and you were confused about
Yeah.
Michelle McCool. So this was a SmackDown only championship.
I was confused by her single facial expression. Does she have
Well,
more?
I think that she has
Wait,
what
did
I
Michelle
well, I
McCool marry
think
The Undertaker?
she did marry The
I'm
Undertaker.
definitely editing out anything I've said negative about Michelle McCool. I don't need the dead man coming for me.
So she has the
I also have
blank.
not seen her in a match, so what do I know? What do I know? Continue.
She has the blankest of intimidating stares. That's
Yeah.
basically, I feel like that's what Michelle McCool and Undertaker do to each other over the like dinner table. They just stare at each other
Yeah.
intimidatingly and blank.
She's watching these competitors like she also doesn't know who they are, but she doesn't have the note cards that JR and Taz have.
Yeah, no, it's pretty ridiculous. Michelle McCool looks like an actual mannequin. She like there may be instances where they actually just, cut away from the shot and they're like, "Oh shit, Michelle made a different facial expression. Oh shit, we need to edit this back in. Let's just put a mannequin in
Yeah,
there."
she does not give a shit about these Maria and Maurice. But
She doesn't.
so
But
this is kind of the end of, maybe not quite the end, but a couple years out from the end of the model era, right?
this is kind of the tale. So what this is basically is that previously the divas, every year they would have a diva who would pose in Playboy. Maria was, I believe, the last diva to do a Playboy spread while they were still employed with the WWE. This is the beginning of the PG era.
Oh,
So
yeah.
they have to change that association that they have with the diva division, the
So you
women.
make a belt that looks like,
A fucking
never mind.
mask. You look like a butterfly
A
mask.
butter, yeah.
So it's more Like it's not denying that past, but it's trying to move away from it. It's one of the notes that I have here is, man, isn't it great to have actual women wrestlers now?
Well, they don't get a lot of time, but they both come out, and I think they both seem kind of cool. And then I think you get a couple of the you get the time-tested Divas move of throwing the other Diva's head to the mat because their hair flies, which,
Yes.
Bailey and Sasha Banks do all the time. You know what I mean? Like,
They
I
do,
think
but
if I were them, I would just never do that move because it immediately reminds me of the only thing that Macho Man's girlfriends were taught about how to wrestle in a ring, Gorgeous George or whatever. Like the first thing when a celebrity woman
yeah.
or a new, like a model gets brought into wrestling training camp, I think they're taught how to grab a lady's head and smash it into the
Slam
mat,
down.
and then how also to take it by putting their hands down first.
I think Menounos knew that.
Yeah, she probably, well, don't, do not tarnish the Menounos name. I don't care if she's married. Don't.
Joe loves Menounos.
I'm picking a
Loves her.
Menounos match next time. I'm picking like a Menounos interview segment from a pre-show of WrestleMania 30, and you're gonna have to fucking watch it and talk about it with me. Okay. But they do a neat spinning backbreaker. They is Maria or it was a bizarre backbreaker thingy. A
It
move.
was it was Maurice who did it to
Yeah.
Maria because the whole thing was that Maria hurt her back randomly.
Yes.
Like
And then,
it was this was just
well, no, she hurts her ankle.
oh, she hurts her ankle,
She
that's
knocks
right.
her foot and causes Maria to land badly. It's not the best, but then you get Maurice's DDT, which is cool. But the main thing I want to talk about, I think the actual wrestling in this match overperformed what I was prepared to see, right? I saw at least one cool move, but I also saw Maurice's awesome character acting. Like
Yeah,
her
Maurice.
attitude, the hand to the ref, like the whole Maurice show here, Maria seemed like the baby face, the
Sure.
happy, good guy. She didn't really need to do that much. She nice slap to Maurice in the beginning, right?
Yes. Maria with a huge slap to Maurice to
Yeah.
get started.
And then Maurice has does so much care like good character acting throughout that it kind of carries the few. This is like a 4 minute match or something, right?
It is. It's 4 to 6 minutes long. I mean, there's not a whole lot. It's more like a camp fight, but with the occasional moves sprinkled in. There's, they keep cutting back to, fucking blank stare McCool,
Yeah.
looking bored on the outside.
Yeah. Better
Maria
things to
goes,
do.
yeah, she's got better things to do. Maria goes for goes off the top rope and injures her leg,
Yeah.
which to me just about summed up the Divas division at that time, which is try to do something and get hurt because
Oh
you shouldn't be
yeah.
wrestling.
Well, no, it was a fake injury.
It was like the kayfabiest of injuries. It was like
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels losing his smile. It was
Yeah.
that like equivalent of injury.
You're right too, though. The thing about them getting like about to do something that is gonna look pretty cool and then not actually getting to do it is super unfortunate. Whoever was booking that shit, because I imagine some of these
Probably fucking
women
Michael Hayes.
knew how to do the thing that they are pretending they are gonna do, right?
Well, and also here's the thing is that most of the divas, like they were models. They were not wrestlers. They were models who were then put in a position where they were forced to learn how to be a wrestler.
And
I can
some
think,
do,
and some do.
and do well.
I think that there's Candice Michelle. Candice Michelle was a prime example of someone who was originally brought in as a model slash diva type character, forced to learn how to be a wrestler, and actually became a really good wrestler. Like, was putting on really great matches with Beth Phoenix on Raw in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, but she had a really bad collarbone injury, and that
Oh
like
no.
killed her career. But she was great for like 2 years, and you could tell that she was actually working at
To
it
learn
and
it.
trying to learn it, and like she really wanted to do it and was like really starting to like love it. And you could tell that that enthusiasm was shining through in the quality of matches that she was having with Beth Phoenix.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking earlier about the Nikki Bella renaissance, you know? And even the improvement in Brie. I mean, I think Nikki wins that battle because she just look, everything she does looks more believable, the power stuff, you know what I mean? But they both got way better.
And she's got the Luger form.
Yeah, all the Luger stuff is really funny and interesting. Like, it's just a really neat choice from a, you know, like, I'm going to pattern a bunch of my moves on Lex Luger. Like, okay, that's pretty bizarre. I love it, you know? Like, but I don't know. Like, what I got out of this match is, would I watch another Maria match? Sure. I have no idea. She doesn't do much in this match. But she doesn't disappoint me. She doesn't just do like the catty Thez press and then the catty punching and then the hair slam and that's it. I remember in the 90s, let alone, you know, like seeing women's matches that were like that drove me nuts. But Marie, would I watch another Maryse match? Absolutely. Even if only to see that cool DDT, but she is at least trying to do so. I mean, she shows that she seems like, she looks like a model. She seems like a wrestler. The way she's telling a story and doing stuff. And to be honest, you don't need to know how to do 80 moves to be able to move around a ring, tell a story, show how you can beat somebody. You know what I mean? And act.
Yeah, totally.
And she seems like she's got like the whole character thing down, the confidence moving around the ring.
Totally.
Not that the commentary seems to give a shit, but one more thing. Does Maryse's arms like incredibly long?
Yes,
when
they
she
are.
Does her thing, her wingspan is just so, I don't know. She's weird.
She's got long Montreal arms.
Yeah, those long Montreal arms. Yeah. Oh, here's the thing I didn't like. I guess I forgot. I did not like Maria's clotheslines. They're kind of like slow motion. But the way they both fall when she does the like jumping clothesline makes a loud sound that kind of sells it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Jason, what did you think about Maria versus Maryse? Because I think you know what I'm going to say.
I know what you're going to say. I think that this match, I didn't like this match. I didn't like it. I think that there were, overall, I would say I didn't like that match. I didn't like the match, but there were elements within the match that I did enjoy. I did enjoy the randomness of Jim Ross and Taz's don't give a shit commentary. I did like the fact that Maryse was so cocky, which made me enjoy her current association with Miz, or Mayor. But, you know, they both have really strong heel, cocky, asshole characters, and they're great at it. I think what I really liked was just the random, the blank, intimidating stare of Michelle McCool.
I think that's scary. At the end of the match, when Maryse gets out and is doing her whole thing in front of her, and she's still just like, one look.
It's fucking hilarious. It's fucking hilarious. I had forgotten that Michelle McCool sucked so much.
Hey man, that's the first ever Divas champion.
Good night, folks.
That's it. I like this match. Thanks, Random Match Generator. This is a weird one. But hey, here's the other thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Is the distance between... Okay. The first match tonight was very good. Dusty Rhodes called it the best tag team match he's ever witnessed.
Yeah.
I think there's a gap in between those. The real quality of the match and the statement that it's the best one ever. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
Do you think maybe there is a gap between the quality of this match and your dislike of it? By which I mean, this is a 4-minute, 5-minute match on SmackDown that not even the company putting it on seems to care about. The only people who seem to care about this match are Maria and Maryse.
And Michelle McCool by association.
Look at her face. She doesn't care about the match. Maryse wins, and Michelle McCool could give a shit, right?
I think that this, if I were watching this episode of SmackDown live,
You would have been getting a snack.
I would have been getting a snack. I would be making a
Which is a
sandwich.
bummer. I don't know. I like this match. Thanks for tuning in. Go to tootf.tumblr. Do you want to wrap this up now? Should we just do
Yeah, fuck yeah. Let's do
that?
it.
Go to tootf.tumblr.com and take a look at the blog posts. We're going to be posting stuff in between and our off weeks. Again, we're going to one episode every 2 weeks, every other Monday, and you'll see in our blog post links to all the matches and probably a picture of Scott Steiner's delightful buns, I think is what we're gonna go this time, right? Technically, it's I should be putting the way I've been cycling the images from like it was like my choice, your choice, random, my choice, your choice,
Yeah.
random. I think this one should be my choice, but those
I
buns,
think the buns might win.
those buns. The buns win. The buns. I wish I could do a Harry Carey impression saying the Cubs win, but the buns win. The buns win.
What you should actually do is you should like Photoshop, you know
Just
that
a
video
I'm just gonna do a
series
zoom in.
Buns of Steel? You should just fucking Photoshop Scott Steiner's ass on a video cassette package of
Oh yeah, that'd be good if I could get
Buns of
Photoshop.
Steiner. Buns
Buns
of
of
Steiner.
Steiner.
I think
Man.
we just named the episode Buns
Otherworldly.
of
Buns of
Steiner.
Steiner. Done, done, and done. Thanks for tuning in. If you got questions, let them know at our Tumblr, reblog, or do the slash ask thing, and we'll answer them. Jason, any last words?
See you guys in 2 weeks.
See you guys later. This is the outro.
It's the outro music.